Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're here with Delegate Jill Carter, who of course represents the 41st District in Baltimore City. Join us with your comments and talk with her at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Comment on our Facebook page. Email us at talk@steinershow.org. But do call 410-319-8888. Delegate Carter, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
It works better than a cell phone.
Yes. Especially my cell phone.
My producer pointed out as we were going to on air today that your Facebook page, is today your birthday?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow's your birthday. Your Facebook page popped up and said you were 101 years old.
Yes. Well, I feel 101, especially since this 13-year stint in local politics. But, you know, I've never been one to like to disclose my age.
Didn't ask you to. Wasn't asking you
so
to.
So I figured that worked well because everybody will assume that I'm much younger than that.
You look very good for 101. But in all seriousness, there's been so much happening in our community, and you wrote an op-ed recently in The Sun trying to address some of the issues that you think are kind of vital to what we're facing.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In all of the years that I've been in office, I've never had anything published in The Sun, even a letter to the editor. So I have to give, you know, credit to my colleague, Sandy Rosenberg. It was really his suggestion. And, you know, everything is politically motivated. One of the reasons I wanted to write about that is that I do a lot of honest talk, but it winds up being a critique of the Democrat Party and Democrat leadership, and it's warranted. But in that instance, I just felt it was an opportunity to show the leadership that, you know, falsely accuses me of not being, you know, on the team sometimes that I am, but also to point out this very glaring issue. It's not just the fact that the Republican Party, and it's no indictment on any specific one, you know, consistently votes against every criminal justice measure that is somewhat progressive and fair and an attempt to reverse the wrong direction that we went in with the war on drugs, the mass incarceration, and the tough on crime mentality. But it's also significant that on the heels of the General Assembly session, you know, it was really troubling that the Democrat leadership refused to pass meaningful legislation on police accountability and changing the culture of policing. But, you know, the Republican Party, the governor, had ample opportunity to do the same thing. And, you know, we see this outreach and we see, you know, coming in with the troops when the situation may have warranted it. But you still don't see any honest effort at changing the culture of law enforcement and fixing the relationship between people in the community and in Baltimore and the police department.
I have a very specific question to ask you about that, but you said something, one thing you said here, I want to explore a minute, because you when you said not being part of the team and people have accused you of not being part of the team, and over the years, you've been in office for 13 years, I've been on the air now for 22 years, and so I've watched your career and we've had conversations a number of times over those years, and people have always seen you in some way. You've been seen, let me take that back. You've been seen by some in the legislative process in Annapolis as almost an outsider because of some of the things you pushed there. I mean, I'm curious, just both personally and politically, what that means for you and what you make of that.
Well, you know, personally and professionally, it's been extremely difficult. And it's very interesting because before I ran for office, I was a practicing attorney. But I was also a big follower of persons like Dr. John Chazelle, you know, holistic health, very spiritual. I'm not a person that is, you know, super aggressive or that, you know, has temper tantrums or, you know, doesn't know. My mother raised me right, so I know how to conduct myself. But this reputation that I've received would make people believe that I'm somehow, you know, it's all designed, I think, to destroy my credibility, which weakens my ability to champion the issues. And frankly, it's the legislative leadership. It's the leadership of the Democratic Party. I'm not, you know, speaking specifically about Mike Miller, Mike Bush, but really much of it had to do with O'Malley. And if I can just elaborate on that, you know,
please do.
Shortly after I was elected, it wasn't very long, I stumbled across this information about almost 100,000 people being arrested.
Right.
And it's about 35,000 a month. And I was the person, you know, that really wound up was the point person that really got that rolling. Well, I'd had a little bit of time in the legislature, and I had seen that the Baltimore Sun really didn't seem to care about anything that I said or did. So I knew that they weren't going to report it. And my experience with the Baltimore delegation had been largely, you know, it's whatever O'Malley wants. You know, they weren't really interested in too much else, and that's really being honest. And so I paid for radio ads to get the information to the public. Because it was such a significant thing, I couldn't fathom not, once I knew that I suspected there was an issue. But when I saw the data, I said, okay, I know that I can't depend on media, so how can I get this information out? How can I let people know how the gravity of the situation? So honestly, I paid for radio ads, which just in an effort to get the information out. And from there, everything kind of snowballed. Mayor O'Malley was never able to see above his personal pride and actually acknowledge that there was merit to the fact that this was a human rights violation and that it wasn't working, it wasn't effective policing, and it was creating a rift between people and police that we see has never been mended. And unfortunately, the local political leaders and politicians, you know, I was still kind of new to the table. They didn't know what to make of me. They were somewhat, I would say, you know, somewhat threatened by me because I had actually gotten elected with no endorsements from any politicians or political establishment. So, you know, they didn't know what to make of me. I had high numbers. And here I was saying, hey, you know, we need to change policing. We need to stop the illegal arrest now. O'Malley could issue an executive order. And it was met with a great deal of vitriol, hostility, and it's something that no matter how much I've attempted to play along, get along, and I've never been a go along, get along, but where I can agree, I really make every effort to show that I can be helpful. I am a Democrat, and it hasn't worked. Like, no matter what I've done, I've never been able to overcome this view that somehow you better shut her down or else she might cause some problems. You know, it's the sort of the mentality of it's a distrust. It's as bad as the distrust between the people and the police. It's like, you know, there's very much a sense of I can't be trusted to follow along, play along. And so, you know, some years ago, I realized that it was a brick wall to be in the General Assembly with this kind of mentality. And so, you know, that's when I had ideas that, well, the real way to fix these problems is to be in control of the office of mayor because they control all the dollars. And frankly, what I really had observed is that since the Baltimore delegation does everything the mayor wants anyway, that's the way to really make effect change.
So you ran for mayor.
And so I did.
I remember that.
And, you know, unlike my success at the office running for delegate, and, you know, I think maybe with one minor exception, and even then it was close, I think that from the first day, 2003, to the most recent election, and there have been four now, I think I've been the highest vote getter
in a city.
I think, and almost in the state. Because, you know, the districts are the districts. They're small, which has always amazed me, but also it amazes and is, I think, somewhat problematic for Democrat leadership. Here's why. I have and I raise less money than anybody elected in public office. And I'll tell you that
And you say that with pride.
I don't. Well,
you do.
I'm actually not right? I'm not that proud of it. But it's you know, it's an enigma. It's a strange phenomenon. It doesn't usually happen. And I'm so thankful that it does. And, you know, it's not guaranteed. So assuming I run again, I don't purport that it's going to say that it's going to happen again. It certainly didn't happen for the office of mayor. I needed to raise money. I didn't raise money. I don't enjoy raising money. I always say, isn't it enough that we do the work and then we have to come and, you know, for lack of a better word, prostitute ourselves to people to try to get support to continue to do the work? Something just seems very wrong with that. So I've never enjoyed doing it. But what was interesting is that, and this is the truth, you know, there's these couple of operatives, these companies, these lobbying firms that raise money for the Democratic Party all throughout the state. And there's two, maybe three top-notch ones. Well, the truth is they were never allowed, so to speak, to work with me. They, you know, the party leaders said, no, do not raise money for her. And so, you know, that avenue was shut off to me, and maybe it's a good thing. So I've always had to, you know, go to the people, go to constituents, go to people that don't have a lot of money, and then raise my own money.
Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888 as we talk with Delegate Jill Cartwright and raise the issues around what's happening with police and community here in Baltimore. We want to hear your thoughts on that, on what we need to do to change the political situation, economic situation in our community. 410-319-8888. You always called in and kind of appraised Jill Cartwright on the air here. Now, our chance to talk together at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts. And so, you know, I don't know if you'll run for mayor again, but when you ran for mayor, So you obviously have ideas and thoughts about what could really change and reform what we're facing here in the city today, the kind of issues we face. Because people seem to have a hard time wrapping their hands around this. I mean, what it really means to change the nature of a police department, if you can, when you see that the police officers themselves, the union, are deliberately saying, okay, if we can't do things the way we want to, then we're just going to step back. And we've seen this spate of murders taking place across the city, and partially because of that. And there is a culture in the department as well that lends itself to what we're seeing. So how do you begin to tackle that? How would you begin to tackle that?
Well, had I become mayor in 2007, I venture to say that we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in, because I knew then that we needed major change in the police department. And I think one of the things I said at the time, you had to get rid of, you know, the leadership at the top that was, you know, invested in this culture. And so it's the top down and the bottom up. You have to get people that really have a heart for the people. All the time, Dr. Tyrone Power speaks to a police commissioner in, I think it's Greensboro, North Carolina, made it clear that the police would respect the community, they would respect the people they serve and protect, and that no kind of brutality or disrespect would be tolerated. You know, it starts with the number of issues. You have to raise people up to want to be police officers in the community and serve and protect their community. They have to come from here, and they have to love, understand, and love people to be able to really effectively police. We have, you know the numbers. We have, what, over 85% of the police department now that still doesn't live in the city.
Right.
It's not an indictment on the commissioner, but he doesn't come from the city. It's a big cultural difference between here and where he's come from. And Baltimore is a unique city. It's unique in many ways. Like, I venture to say that, you know, the things on the streets are not exactly the same in other cities. You know, the gang issues are different. The people are different. And there has to be some kind of understanding. So you have to put the right people in place. That's the first thing. That's the way to fix the problem, is put the right people in place and then have the right policies in place. It starts at the top. The leadership from the mayor's office trickles down through the police department, and I think that's what we've been lacking. There hasn't been any real leadership there. And you know, some people have said, well, you know, Mayor Rawlings Blake and Dixon before her, they didn't have the zero tolerance policy, but they also did not have they didn't come in and say, hey, we're going to have zero tolerance for zero tolerance. We're going to have zero tolerance for illegal arrest. We're going to have zero tolerance for police brutality. In fact, it was only when, you know, got exposed recently that it's become an issue that's even been on the radar screen for the mayor's office. The mayor's office and you know, the Board of Estimates has been, you know, routinely just doling out these tens of thousands and millions of dollars without blinking and without any transparency or communication to the public.
Let me open the phones here. We're talking with Delegate Jill Carter. 410-319-8888 is the number. And Ernest on the west side, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening.
Good morning.
I mean, good morning.
That's right. Good morning.
You cannot compare a police department with a 300-man police department with a 3,500-man police department. That police department that Dr. talks about in South Carolina, he only had 300 men, and not all of them were sworn. So you can't make that comparison. But I believe that there needed a change. But when you had a Tom Frazier here, who made it plain that he was going to change things, and any type of police brutality that he was going to deal with personally, and he would fire anybody that he would see that was wrong in his police brutality. The people got rid of Tom Frazier. It was the city council that when they brought Ed Norris down here, who was had that broken windows policy from New York, that zero tolerance, lock up people for anything, and was later found out to be a convicted felon. They accepted him. And then when they got rid of him, they got this other guy, the same from New York. What was his name?
Kevin Clark.
Kevin Clark, the same. Kevin Clark was a zero tolerance guy, and you have people that's lawyers trying to get his job back.
Well, you know, Ernest, I agree with you, believe it or not. But here's the issue. It starts at the mayor's office. It starts with the mentality of the mayor's office is the point that I'm making. And so if you have a mayor whose head is right, then the commissioner's head is going to be right, and that is going to impact the culture within the department. And so in each instance, I'm talking about the leadership at the top and the lack of a political will to fix this problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I interviewed Tom Frazier a lot while he was here. He did it. I don't know about the people pushing him out, but he certainly was pushed out of office. Because in some ways the police helped push him out because he did want to reform that union and reform the police department. He did attempt to do it. He was a Vietnam vet. I actually had a lot of respect for him in the times I've interviewed him. He had a very kind of softer way of addressing issues than other people did. And he was an interesting character. He still lives here, but no longer police commissioner. I remember when he was there.
Must be tough for him.
Was not an easy road.
Watch what's going on, right.
So we're taking a break. We're coming right back. So we're going to take a very quick break. Coming right back with Delegate Jill Carter. And when we come back, we're going to go to Jones, Nick, Jay, Jason. All of you are going to get online here. We're going to get all of your calls and thoughts on the air and on our way to break. It's Poetic Justice, Kendrick Lamar. Born this day in 1987. Happy birthday. I told you that a flower bloomed in a dark room, which you trusted. I mean, you need to hear this. Love is not just a verb, it's you looking in the mirror. Love is not just a verb, it's you looking for it, maybe. Call me crazy, we can both be insane. A fatal attraction is common, and what we have common is pain. I mean... Stayed in bed all morning just to pass the time. There's something wrong here, there can be no denying. One of us is changing, or maybe we just stopped trying. It's Too Late, Carole King, from her album Tapestry, which hit number one on this day in 1971. I'm Mark Sandler here with Delegate Jill Carter. I'm going to go right to the phones at 410-319-8888. Line two, I said Jones? Is that what it says? Jones, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Mark. This is Verna Jones-Rodwell.
Oh, hi. How are you, Verna?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to call in... I didn't necessarily want to speak to the issue at great length or depth, but social justice is so very important, as all that's been said. But more importantly, I wanted to speak to Delegate Jill Carter, because I think that her voice is so important in Annapolis. And Jill and I have worked together. We haven't always agreed on how to do things or and our focuses have been different when I served in the legislature, but it is so important, Jill, that you keep doing what you do and keep talking, and hopefully more will join in you in the conversation, because there's more than one way to do something for the good of the people. No one has the ultimate answers, but by working together, we can really have some impactful actions to take place. And I agree. You know, there is the leadership is so important, and your leadership is so important, and your voice is so important. And I just wanted to call you to affirm that.
Senator Jones, I appreciate you.
You still there, Verna?
Yeah, I'm still here. And that's all I wanted to say. And God bless. Have a great day.
Thank you. Now, and I hope that you're enjoying your time now that you're, you know, out of this den of, you know, confusion.
But it's interesting. Verna, like you, though, I mean, I said this on the air before, that was kind of a loyal Democrat and did a lot as senator, but then was thrown to the wayside by the very people that she helped support by being forced into a district where they knew that she was going to lose.
You know, I look at examples like that, and I do wonder, like, you know, what benefit really to be so loyal, because it seems like you get nothing, little to nothing, for being loyal, but you get a lot of problems for the perception of being disloyal, for being disloyal. So, you know, actually, you know, frankly, it's an indictment on the Democratic Party, I guess in the country, but definitely in the state of Maryland, as we saw the last election. To be quite honest with you, Mark, they need to step up their game. The election should have shown them something. And now there are younger people. And I have to tell you, one of the greatest inspirations for staying in the General Assembly is the new group of legislators that have come in that are not the same. And had they been there when I got there, things might have been different. They might have changed.
You see them really as different?
Some of them, yes.
Yeah.
There are some strong social justice members.
Corey McRae, people like that?
There are some, yes, and even on my committee, too.
Right.
And people here may not all know that you've got Charles Sidnor, actually, from Baltimore County, was incredible. He's quiet. He's one of those really quiet, you know, almost Columbo types where you don't expect it coming, but he's wonderful. And then you have David Moon from Montgomery County, Marisay Morales. There's a gentleman, Will Smith, from Montgomery County. I mean, honestly, we almost shut it down a couple of times. And, you know, a little bit we're working, I think we will.
So that, does that give you inspiration to create something new in the state legislature? I mean, that there may be a movement of people that actually, if not in the majority, can be stand up and be heard and help create a new sense of politics in the state?
It does give me some hope. But what I know is that the lore of being liked, accepted, and getting perks, the perks of being an insider, is so great that not many can resist it. So I'm just praying and hoping and holding out hope that, you know, the people that have come in strong will stay strong. But it's not an easy thing to do. And the only reason, truthfully, that I've been able to kind of do it is, one, you know, my DNA. But number two, I'm a reluctant politician. Like, I never wanted to be in politics. And so it was never my goal to get there and be elevated. I always just wanted the opportunity to try to make change some laws, you know, to use my skills as an advocate and a lawyer to make better laws that will help people. That's really all that. And that's why I stay, because I want that opportunity. I know that, you know, however hard it is, if I leave, then I won't be able to do it.
Right. And you know that, and this is the spirit of Walter P. is smiling, though.
Well, somewhat. Or he's saying, you know, you are crazy. I would expect better, you know, from you to have sense enough to know you know, you may not be able to win this.
410-319-8888. Nick in Crofton, you're on the air.
Mark, how are you doing?
Very well, Nick. Welcome.
Good morning. All these issues seem to tie together. Mark, you were on Melissa Harris Perry on Sunday.
I was.
And, you know, that's a great discussion, too. And, you know, let me just say, I hope I put this on as articulately as I can, but anyone that is for peace and social justice, for trying to keep kids off the street and in school and trying to get them jobs and trying to keep them out of this criminal justice system, anyone of any hue, skin color, anyone like that, is my sister or brother. And I just, you know, these are the things. I'm very optimistic, Delegate. I'm almost naively optimistic, because I think that if you put Morgan State and Coppin State had forms in Sandtown, Winchester, and close to my heart, because my grandmother lived near this area for 40 years, Walbrook Junction and other areas of the city, and just in the evening times, taught our history and culture, taught that for free. Come sit down and listen to this. Now, I know people might say, what good is that going to do? Well, I think it will do a great deal of good. I think if you are walking around and don't know your history and your culture, more, if you don't know how we got to this point in 2015, you are almost operating or trying to fight the power without being fully armed. And I know that's something that kind of is a pie in the sky thing, but actually, I really think that can be one of the essential things. I also think that, so of course, justice in the criminal justice system and fairness in policing. Because even if you have real economic development in these areas, which I do believe is very much needed also,
right.
Even if you do have an improved educational system, which we can do another show on talking about what is actually being taught, but even if those two improve and you still have an average citizens who are just trying to walk down the street being harassed, beaten up, and sometimes killed by police, you're diminishing everything else that you've done. I know you have other calls, Mark.
Right.
Always an interesting discussion. And just one more thing to Delegate Carter. Now, you're on the right track about what I call myself as a Democrat in the Democratic Party. I shabby to terrible in the 2014 gubernatorial and other elections. I think
Brown.
Brown, essentially, the last 2 weeks of the campaign, Mark, he essentially was saying something like, "Vote for me, I'm a Democrat." Well, nobody's going to do that in this current environment that we're in. So thank you both, and have a good show.
Thanks.
And I'll continue to listen.
Please express those criminal justice thoughts to Governor Hogan, Mike Miller, and Mike Bush. Thank you.
Right. I mean, I think when Governor Hogan vetoed the enfranchisement of returning citizens from prison to our communities, that was a huge thing. But so when you go back in September, that particular bill.
January.
Did I say September?
I mean
January. Did I say September? That's where I am. I'm just tired. January. That when you go back in January, that you're going to have to organize a group to override that veto.
Well, I don't know. I think it'll be done.
I mean,
when Ehrlich was governor, we went in and first day, the first order of business was to override the governor's vetoes. So, listen, I assume that's still going to be the case with this issue, especially since, the Democratic Party should have an interest in being more inclusive and doing this. I think that's going to happen. I mean, the bills, to my knowledge, all the bills he vetoed are veto-proof, meaning that they passed with more than two-thirds.
Right.
So
You were too shy in the House, weren't you, on the veto-proof for this particular bill?
Yeah, it was veto-proof, and also this bill that some people may or may not be interested in, asset forfeiture, and then the silly, silly veto of the paraphernalia bill.
Right.
I just thought that was kind of ridiculous.
So you can have this small amount of marijuana, but if we see a pipe in your pocket,
yeah,
you're going
to jail. it still gives police that
right.
out and prosecutors that out to prosecute for frivolous things. And that is a pretty silly, sad thing that didn't pass, that was vetoed.
So let me go back to the phones here. I'll come back with another thought. 410-319-8888. Gene Vine in line 4. Hi, Gene. Line 4. Hello? You there? All right, let's go to Jason and on line 5. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mark, first of all, I want to say, I just started really listening to your station, man. You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you. I'm glad you're with us.
Jill, listen, I want to personally commend you and encourage you that you're also doing an outstanding job. And I was listening to what you were saying in terms of some of the feedback that you had gotten back, you had gotten from the O'Malley's office. I had an opportunity to meet that guy. And in my opinion, he's a very arrogant guy, professionally and on a personal level. So I'm not surprised of the response that you had gotten from him. I remember when he walked through the city of Baltimore City years ago when he was a mayor, and he wasn't walking through the city to really reach out to the people. He was walking into the drug areas to really see who he could put behind bars. You know, he has that in my opinion, that slave mentality, and he's really not for the people. But I want to encourage you, man. I am really just like so proud of you to have the courage, to speak out. And I hope to pray that you run again because we love you. And I'm speaking for a lot of people, a lot of Baltimoreans. We love you and we support you. But just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Jason. I appreciate that. I really do. And hopefully, you know, I wanted to say, if I can quickly.
Sure, please. Go ahead.
I did get some significant legislation passed this year. And one, I really want people to know, because I've been sponsoring this bill since 2004, which is a no-brainer bill that just says that if you are charged with something and you are not convicted, you're not guilty, you're studded, you're null prost, even a PBJ, that you have an absolute right to expunge it, the charge. But most people don't, because they sleep on their rights, because they think it's not a conviction, they don't have to do anything. So it stays there, and then years later they may get a conviction for anything, no matter how small. It could be driving on a suspended license, which I've seen a bit. So once you get a conviction for anything, you are forever barred from expunging any non-convictions that you had. And in Baltimore, there are people that have a lot of charges that didn't result in convictions, a long list that really gives the taint and the stigma of criminality and just, you know, you don't have control of your life. And it is a bar. If you ever get arrested, the commissioners look at that, how many times you've been arrested, even if they're not supposed to count it. It counts against you. So the bill, the subsequent conviction rule bill, passed and was not vetoed. So October 1, everybody, get those non-convictions expunged.
Do they have to apply to do that?
Yeah, you have to file a petition. Well, you file a petition with the court. You can go right to the court, pay your $30, and submit it right there. Or there's a lot of organizations around here that do it. You all know, you may have heard of Clean Slate, Mark Matthews. He does these expungements. The Homeless Persons Representation Project does it for indigent people. And I've read recently that I talked about it in my editorial. Tessa Hill Austin has said that the NAACP is now doing it.
Right, right. So
lawyers will do it too, but they'll charge you.
They'll charge you money, but so you can get it done just for $30. And man, for $30 is a lot of money for some folks, but for $30, freeing your future is not
it's a critical thing to do.
Right, right. That's a very important bill, and as important as that, and all the kind of re-enfranchisement of people in our society that you have fought for in the state legislature. We were last night at Sandtown Winchester doing a town meeting, which will appear on our program this week or next. I'm not sure what it's going to be, this Thursday or next Thursday that we air it, with Elder Harris and folks from New Song and St. Peter Claver and other places to talk about that community and food and changing the nature of the community. One of the big topics there had to do with developing in neighborhoods like Sandtown throughout the city and where the money goes. So I'm just thinking, if you were mayor, I mean, how would you change that dynamic? That's something nobody's ever has yet to do.
Well, that's the first thing. If I were mayor, there would already be an upset to the status quo, because I'm not invested with all of the same financiers, developers, corporate interest, and even the nonprofit industrial complex. But, you know, interestingly enough, in looking at an old 1968 video that featured Walter Carter on Pennsylvania Avenue after the riots, I noted the effort to go around and create community councils in every community to oversee the policies and you know, the money and to safeguard those communities is what I got out of it. You may even know more than I do, because you know, I didn't really even know about that. So
you were just a baby.
I think that that is a critical thing, and why is that important? Because, as we often say, it's the people in the community that best know what the community needs, but they don't get the resources, and they should. And so something like these community councils, as opposed to, no offense to anyone, but, you know, the Family League and, you know, others that get everything, it's not fair. It's not fair to the people to continue to give to pay people top dollar to go in and create programs and you know, make efforts to fix people and fix communities that can totally fix themselves if we just give them the resources.
That's a big piece of the key. And the difference was in that day when your father was leading those efforts in neighborhoods in Baltimore, that it was federal money and lots of it that came in and allowed people to begin to rebuild their neighborhoods, which people started doing. And that money was taken away, and it was ended up then with no money given to foundations and businesses that became the ones in power, and the communities lost all control over whatever they were just beginning to gain in the late 60s when your father was leading the charge before he passed away.
Well, just like we have Minority Business Enterprise Program, you know, I think that we should seriously consider a way to, you know, have something similar, you know, with local people having to be in partnership with or in some kind of way benefit from the dollars when they come in. and to do their own programs. I mean, the best ball club or the best recreation center or the best after-school program is from people in the community that love the community, and many of them do it for free and get nothing.
Jill Carter, I really appreciate you taking the time coming in studio today. Looking forward to having you back, both on panels and in here on one-on-ones as we look at all the issues facing our city and facing our state, facing our people as this campaign for Senator and President picks up and the mayor's campaign picks up. And you'll be running, hopefully, again for the House of Delegates and continue to represent the 41st, whatever you choose to represent. Delegate Jill Carter, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, and thank you for listening.
And take a brief break. And on our way to break here, we are going to come right back from that. We're hearing Bebop Lula by Gene Vincent and his Blue Caps. Jill Callip of the Blue Caps was born on this day in 1930. We'll be right back and talk to some workers walking out of their jobs today at BWI and find out why. Stay with us. Bebop, Lula, don't leave. Bebop, Lula.